Welcome to Look Roll. I'm Brian. In the previous episode, there were some discussions at camp that I enjoyed, and it got me thinking about a way for listeners to contribute to Not and Maldita's story. The game His Majesty the Worm by Joshua McCrowell has a fun random table of 50 campfire discussions. You make camp, you roll on a table, and then the players discuss whatever the topic is that comes out of the table. I had already been thinking about using that for my game, but then I thought it would be cool to ask listeners for entries for a random table like that. I've created a form where you can submit your entry, if that's something you're interested in. The URL is tinyurl.com/lookrollcamp. I'll share that link in the show notes. With that out of the way, let's get on with the show. A recap on what had happened previously. The company of Not, the Gilded Knight, Maldita, his squire, and Dorka, their animal tracker guide, were ascending Broken Peak. They were hunting a great vulture. During the ascent, Maldita had a vision at a sacred location and has got a glimpse of a new myth in the realm of the Hound. And that experience and talking about that with Dorka has brought her and Dorka closer. She understands a little bit more of what motivates him and what he's seeking to do, which is to have his sight healed. He has poor eyesight, especially at night. And he previously had a vision where he saw his yet-to-be-born child killed in a way that he believes he could prevent if he had better sight. He's seeking the help of a great healer called Carenza, who has refused him help. So he's trying to gain connections and leverage to persuade her to heal him. The company progressed up the mountain and they encountered Lord Trake, a dispossessed noble who believes his family has a claim to the throne, and his bodyguard, Lady Laria. They helped them in a search to find a seal, which is an important relic of their family that gives credence to their claim to the throne. And then Lady Laria proceeded with Not and Maldita to fight the great vulture. They set a trap, they laid in wait. There was a battle, and Laria was killed. And that's where the previous session ended, with Laria's death and Not and Maldita killing the vulture. Back in the monastery where Trake and Laria were first encountered, Trake himself and Dorka are waiting for the others to return. They are preparing some food and they're sharing stories and getting to know each other a little better. I think Dorka is reserved about sharing his background and his slightly outlandish plan for himself, that he had a vision about his future and he wants to protect this son who doesn't exist. So he's making small talk. He's only really confided in Maldita that this is going on. They're cooking and they're chatting casually. I think Trake has a great deal of confidence in Laria. He's not particularly worried about the outcome of this battle. Just some creature, she's fought many, and he's expecting her to return with the others in tow quite soon. So it is a shock when he looks up and he sees Not and Maldita carrying Laria's body towards them. I want to do a couple of rolls to clarify a few things for myself. I had already known that he is a nobleman and Laria is his loyal bodyguard. But given that she's died, I'd like to know more about their relationship. So I'm going to roll on a spark table for that. So I'll take 2d12 and roll on the relationship spark table. 12 and a 9. The state is resentful and the connection is mentor. I like the idea that Laria has been a mentor to Trake. Which one of them has been resentful? I'm going to do another roll. Just a 50-50 thing. He's a little younger than her. Laria was a loyal servant. She was a mature knight, a loyal servant to the former king. And when the king was betrayed and killed by the now Queen Branc, Laria took the king's brother, Trake, into hiding with other members of the family, the surviving members that survived the betrayal. Trake had been maybe something like a playboy. His brother was the king. He didn't have any great responsibilities, or at least none that he took particularly seriously. And with his brother's death, he was thrust into this position of being the leader of the remainder of the family. And any chance the family had to restore itself was with this slightly irresponsible young man. He was at first, during this period of them escaping and living in hiding, he was panicky and fearful and wanted to flee the realm and give up any claim on the throne. And it was Laria who dragged him through that and trained him. He does carry a sword. He wears mail. He's ready to fight. He learned all of that from her. But there has been a recent problem in their relationship. I don't think I need to decide what that is right now, but she had been resentful of him, still loyal and still would lay down her life for him, but had judged some recent decision of his to be unwise. And needless to say, Trake values her greatly. And when he sees that she is being carried back, he jumps up, maybe knocking over the boiling pot where they'd been preparing food, and running towards them. And he's closely followed by Dorca, who wants to see, obviously, what's happened and can he help. He runs up and is eagerly asking what happened. Where is she harmed? And he's looking around on her body to see what signs of injury are visible. She was attacked by this great vulture. Her body was kind of like thrashed from side to side. She's probably got dislocated limbs potentially, and then her body was thrown down onto the ground and could have broken bones. This is all in addition to the fact that she's dead, so she looks in a really bad way. He's panicked and is barking orders at Maldita and Dorca more so than the knight. Not he sends them to the holy well, which is nearby. There's a holy well which restores spirit and can be encouraging in times of difficulty, which the family relied on when they were in hiding here. And in desperation, he's thinking perhaps the waters of this well will do something to restore her. I'm in two minds about this. I'm very much committed to the idea that a character who has died has died, and let's not twist things out of shape for the sake of attachment to characters. But the fact that there's this holy well here, I think I'm going to do a 1 in 100 chance that putting some waters from this well onto her forehead will restore her life. So I'm going to roll the D100. If I get 100, then this desperate effort, I think it feels kind of Arthurian that this could work. But I personally don't want it to work. Anyway, let's see what happens. 27. Dorca casts aside from the pot the simple stew that they were making, and he runs to the holy well. He gathers some waters and runs back to where Nott and Trake are kneeling over the broken body of Laria. I think everyone is looking with sadness at Trake as he's kind of dipping his thumb into the water and making some symbol on the forehead of Laria, dragging this holy water over her skin, probably wiping away some blood in the process from cuts and grazes on her skin. And he is muttering under his breath, wishing for her to show some sign of life. And then he's leaning in, listening as close as he can to her mouth to see if he can hear her breath. And after a minute or two, he'll lean back and he'll repeat this again until her forehead is just soaked, and he's trying it again and again. He goes through a few cycles of this, and Maldita and Nott and Dorca are looking on, and it's heartbreaking to watch this. This man who, when they'd first met him, seemed so sure of himself, kind of a true noble as they think of it, someone who would not have any doubt about how to act in any situation. That's how they perceived him when they met him. And now he seems like a child who doesn't understand what has happened and is struggling to bring his mentor back to life. And I think it falls to Nott to interrupt this. Maldita looks at him and Nott sees in her eyes the unspoken suggestion, go forward and stop him. And Nott nods. He steps forward and kneels next to Trake and lays a hand on his shoulder. Trake says, What are you doing? She needs these waters. And he kind of shrugs him off and he continues laying on this water. And he's actually used up the pot. He throws the pot at Dorca and says, fill it up again. We need more. And Dorca looks at Nott and waits to see if Nott will send him on. Nott nods to him and Dorca leaves to gather more water. Nott says, Honorable Lord Trake, it is with a heavy heart that I report to you the death of Lady Laria. And he's slow in his words and precise and tries to hold eye contact with Trake, who keeps wanting to look down and look at the dead woman beneath him. And Nott says, she fought heroically in a glorious battle that will be remembered in song for ages to come. She defeated a foul beast and protected myself and my squire. We owe her our lives, and I pledge myself to you. At that last comment, Maldita gasps. It's not something they had talked about on the way back. They hadn't really said anything as they were carrying Laria's body back. But Nott has decided, I don't think out of pity, but out of a sense of rightness, that Laria died because of his quest, and he should honor her by taking up her role. So Nott pledges his allegiance to Trake and Trake's family in this moment. And it's that pledge and the significance of it that Trake has to deal with these sorts of, you know, people declaring that they'll support his family or that they're fearful to do so. And this is what he's dealt in for the past years. He's been trying to gain support to reclaim the throne for his nephew. That oath from Nott is what shakes him back to the reality of this moment, that Laria is dead and she's not coming back. And he has a responsibility now to acknowledge that a knight has offered his allegiance to him. Dorca arrives back with the water and he kneels down beside Trake and he bows his head, and Trake responds to that first. There's some kind of graciousness in Trake that he doesn't ignore the servants. Listen, it's 2025. I'm talking in the world of this thing differently than I would if this was modern. Anyway, he acknowledges Dorca before he responds to Nott's oath. He lays a hand on Dorca's hand where he's holding this small pot where he'd gathered the water. He says, thank you, Dorca. I will always remember your service during this moment. And then he stands, and Nott knows that it's appropriate that he remains kneeling. Lord Trake stands before Nott, the Gilded Knight, and Trake says, Sir Nott, I thank you for bringing me these sad tidings and for delivering Laria's body back to me. Please rise, and in doing so, rise as a retainer of House Trake. Our fates are now bound together, and I am thankful for your service. Nott stands, and he is now a knight in service of Trake's house. This place is a monastery. It's a place that is important to the family of House Trake. I think Trake will consider it to be a suitable burial site for Laria. So we're in the afternoon phase of the day. The morning was spent lying in wait for the vulture, and then it arrived early in the afternoon. They'll spend the rest of the afternoon phase preparing a grave and performing burial rites for Laria. I wonder, is there something I could throw in here of what kind of ritual is done in this realm for a burial? I'll take a look at some of the spark tables and see if anything jumps out. I'm going to roll on food and goods and see what that comes up with, and maybe there's some kind of offering that's made at a new grave to honor the deceased. Herbal fruit. and the goods is fine wood. Okay, so they have prepared the grave and they have buried Laria. And the sun is setting as they make a simple meal for themselves, just dried fruits. They had the ingredients of the stew earlier, which were tossed onto the ground. Maybe they'll recover some of that, but that's not for this sacred meal. So the ritual is that they eat together by the graveside and leave some portion of the food on the grave. And also, there is a piece of wood that they take and they kind of whittle it together. So they pass it around one to the next with a small knife and carve into it to make their marks and to make marks that symbolize Lady Laria and her life and things that were important to her. It may not be particularly legible to someone else who sees this piece of wood. They may not be able to discern what all of the symbols mean, but it's the act of doing that and saying what you're carving into it as you do it. I think for the three of them who just met Laria, they can acknowledge her battle and include that. For Trake, it may be more meaningful to put something more than that. So maybe he spends more time carving than the others. He talks about the story that they know the broad strokes of already, about the betrayal of the family and how she was the key figure in making sure that any of them survived. He even tells a story that he wouldn't normally tell, where on the night of the betrayal, when Queen Branc and her knights killed the king, Trake was utterly drunk and would have had no chance of escape if left to his own wits. And Laria found him and dragged him out of the keep with a young child, the son of the king, in tears, holding onto her back while she had to deal with this drunken mess of an adult who should have been able to help but wasn't. And a few other members of the family kind of gathering what possessions they could as they escaped into a boat. Oh, I shouldn't say a boat unless I know. You know what? Hexes are big. You can have like a stream or something, you can have a small river without being on the map. They escaped into a boat and got out of the keep before they were found. He tells that story, which is embarrassing to him, but really highlights what Laria was capable of and her devotion as well. That even though he was behaving so shamefully in the context, she was still loyal to the family and still protected him long enough for him to become the man he is today. And I want to linger on this a little bit longer. So I'm going to think of something else that he mentions when he's sharing stories about her. So there's a drama table and a news table. Let's see what I get from those. Drama. The theme is rivalry and the detail is gold and news. The subject is market and the mood is optimistic. So the Trake family, I will introduce a first name for Lord Trake at some point. As I'm seeing it now, they're referring to him as Lord Trake, as in, like, that's his surname. But there's going to be other Trakes, unless things go hopelessly awry. The Trake family went into hiding and became dispossessed of all of their wealth. So one of the things that they had to do early on in that period of exile was to try to reclaim some wealth by visiting people who owed family money and asking for it to be paid, which was quite dangerous because those families were being watched and it was possible that they would show up at some home and ask for payment and then find that there were the agents of Queen Branc there to take them. But there were families who were rivals to the Trake family who did not want to pay. They saw this as, oh, you know, the debt's cancelled now that they've fallen from grace. And Trake tells a story of himself and Laria visiting a fine home in the countryside where, I'm going to need a name, the Harbiger family that owed them significant money and had shown no signs that they intended to pay it back. There was some negotiation and relying on codes of honor and things like that. They had come to some sort of suggestion that there could be a duel. So Laria steps forward and says, I will fight your best champion from House Harbiger. Let that decide whether this debt is repaid. And the matriarch of House Harbiger rejects this and says that no, it must be Trake himself who fights. Trake had, in his childhood, had learned how to play, how to fight with wooden swords, just like as a school subject almost, that he didn't take seriously and didn't pay much attention to, and then for years later never picked up a sword. But recently, before this happened, Laria had been training him in preparation for what the family would have to go through. So this was his first test of what he'd learned from her. And Trake fought a knight, maybe not a mature knight, but a young one, a retainer of House Harbinger. And it was... For a moment there, I had a thought that I could play out that scene of Trake fighting his first proper sword fight against the knight. And I thought, you know what? I've been on this mountain for ages. Let's try and get past this and get back into riding around the realm. Let me just do a luck roll to see how the fight went in the early stages of it. A 3. Trake had some early knocks in that fight and was losing hope and was fearful that he was going to be defeated and this would be another knock against their family, that they would never regain anything. And then he was encouraged by Laria. She had watched the other fighter and seen a weakness in how he was favoring one leg over the other due to some injury, and shouts this out to him, and Trake is able to take advantage of that and win the day. He tells this story and says that he has never felt in these years that any challenge he faced, that he faced it alone, even if Laria wasn't there with him, alongside him, protecting him, fighting for their family and for their honor. He's always felt that she was there in the lessons that she taught him. And he hopes that he will always feel that in the years to come. And as he says that, he lays down this small wooden token, kind of roughly carved in the shape of a person, now with all these marks on it, symbolizing her achievements or some of them. He lays that down on the grave next to some pieces of dried fruit, offerings for her final meal. And the day ends. They're not technically sleeping out of doors because this is a very simple dwelling. This monastery, there is one building in it that has a decent roof. They can go indoors, they can be secure in the night. So there's no wilderness roll tonight. I don't want to play through the descent of Broken Peak, so I want to skip on to them leaving this site. But first I want to think about where they're going. Broken Peak is down in the southeast of the realm. And what I'm eager for, rather than doing this randomly, I'm kind of eager for a long journey, because I haven't had one in this campaign yet. So scanning the map, I'm seeing that there's a dwelling in the north that I'm going to take as being the home of the Trake family. So it's in a secluded place. The authorities of this realm do not know the Trake family is living there, but they're living comfortably. It's not a beaten up shack or anything. It's just a hidden stronghold. And it's a decent distance away from where they are now, so I want to play through that journey and then potentially advance time when they arrive. They rise early the next morning and spend a moment at the graveside of Laria, the lineage knight, and then they descend Broken Peak. And it takes a phase of the day. So they take some time at the bottom of Broken Peak to discuss their next steps. The servants who had watched their horses while they were up on the mountain are dismissed. I don't want to be dealing with some extra people in this party. So we have Trake, Nott, Maldita, and Dorca. And Dorca has also completed the service that he was hired for. They hired him to lead them to Broken Peak. He's from the village of Bitterseed, where they spent the end of the green season. They hired him to lead them to Broken Peak and to lead them to the location of the vulture's nest. And he's done that. So Nott begins, as he's kind of dismissing the servants, he begins to dismiss Dorca and to thank him for his service. And Maldita interrupts. Maldita, who shared a kind of an important scene with Dorca on the mountain while Nott slept, understands more about what Dorca seeks. She cuts in and she says, "Not, Dorca has been a great help to us. Perhaps if he's willing," and she looks at Dorca knowingly, "he may want to join us on this journey." I think he would be helpful to us. And Dorca's eyes light up. He's excited by this. He wants to be well connected. He wants to influence the healer, Carenza, to address his sight impairment that he has. And Nott is kind of eager at the moment to please Maldita because they've had difficulties in their friendship. And seems if this is important to Maldita, then it's important to him, so he agrees. So there will be four of them making up the company for now. Then there's the decision about the route. So broadly speaking, they're traveling north. But while they were on the mountain, Maldita was the first to notice that to the northwest, there is a bog that had this ominous look to it. From a height, you could look down and see that the mottling of colors in the texture of the landscape made the shape of a huge skull. It brings to mind this idea of the risen dead that they've encountered several times in their travels. And they all saw this. I think it would be hard not to have seen it. She was the first to see it. But even Trake saw this as he was ascending the mountain. They agree that they should go there. It's more or less on their route. And a great night has just fallen. All the knights of the realm have in their oath and in their responsibilities to seek the myths and to protect the realm. And even though Trake's main concern is restoring his family to their position of power, he doesn't take the knight's oath lightly, and he wants to respect the Gilded Knight's oath and also to honor the memory of Laria. So they agree that the first direction that they will take is towards this fairly creepy location that they saw from the mountain, and to see if it's somehow connected to the risen dead. The morning phase was spent descending Broken Peak, so I have to do a wilderness roll. That's a 4. Encounter the Hex's landmark, otherwise all clear. The Hex's landmark is the ruin of an old prison that was built near the bottom of the mountain, and also the potential resting place. Well, I say potential, I've heavily implied it, that there is a huge creature burrowed within Broken Peak that caused the land to rumble just before their fight with the vulture. What I feel, because I've hit this landmark a few times, I don't want to feel like I'm retreading the same ground again and again. So I'd like to kind of spark it up a little bit with something else. I'm going to just ask a general question to ask the stars about how this landmark, how this ruin might manifest. The sign is the ship, indicating direction and struggle, and the position is colliding, representing change and violence. Okay, and I'll ask another question. Should I focus on the idea of the prison that was here previously, or the creature within the mountain? So I'll just ask, am I focusing on the prison? 5, no, but. They've just dismissed the servants, and they're discussing the dead, this threat that they've encountered, and planning to move in the direction that they believe might give them some insight or some opportunity against this threat. While they're having this discussion, the ground rumbles again. There's an earthquake. This is something that happened before while they were on the mountain, but it's stronger this time. And I mentioned before that Broken Peak has this shape of one side of the peak of the mountain having been broken away and partially missing, so that it looks like a blade pointing upwards. The earthquake is profoundly strong, and the other thing that's apparent when they look up at the mountain is this very large burrow into the mountain, which you can just about make out from this distance, glows redder and brighter than before, almost like a star appearing in the sky, but low down on the horizon and appearing in front of the landscape. They see, before they hear it, the shape of the mountain change. It cracks, and this asymmetry in the mountain becomes more pronounced. It's like the blade is being thrust upwards, and the mountain on the other side is collapsing further. It's unclear how many of the landmarks that they explored up there will survive this massive change in the mountain. They watch it happen, and it's terrifying. Something on this scale moving what must be quite quickly. And then the sound reaches them. And and it is deafening. It's like a blast of sound that they feel it in their lungs compressing when the sound wave crashes into them and even stagger backwards a few paces. It's undeniable that there is something monstrous within Broken Peak, something on a scale that's hard to comprehend. Trake is the first to speak. He just offers a quiet hope that Laria's grave is undisturbed by what's happened. And they turn and leave, because things like this just happen sometimes in the realm, and they're not going to hang around and investigate. So it is afternoon. They will spend the phase traveling towards the Myth Hex of the Dead. Let's do a weather roll. 2 fours. The description is bright and the element is sunlight. That lifts their spirits a bit. They know that they're moving into what could be quite a dangerous place, but the sun is shining brightly, and for the first time in what feels like quite a while, they feel the warmth of it up on the mountain. The mountain was just always cold. They travel onwards in reasonably good spirits. It is good to travel with comrades, and they feel kind of an early bond forming between the group. And it's a nice kind of ray of sunshine in what has been a hard day prior to this. And they arrive into the bog, this possibly cursed place that from the mountain looked like a skull. And this is happening at the end of the afternoon while the sun is setting. The rule on the myths page, ending a phase in the hex containing a myth always reveals its next omen. When possible, the knights also get the drop on the omen. Okay, the omen is 5 skeletons, mocking bones, powered by hatred for the living, tormenting defenseless travelers. The travelers are artisans, known for their ability to make fine weapons out of certain woods. The details of the mocking bones conjured into service, it gives their stats, it gives their weapons. I've had to look up the word FALX, which is a kind of a hooked blade, and they're harmed by running water, which seems like a thing that not will be unlikely to work out. Somehow the party get the drop on this omen. The omen is essentially an ambush. To get the drop on an ambush, I think you would have to perceive that the ambush is going to happen before it happens. And when I think of ambush, what comes to mind very quickly is raised ground and the group that's going to be ambushed being lower down and someone kind of watching them from above. I need to shake that idea out of my head, because this is a bog where I don't think that's necessarily possible. So what I imagine is that there is a trail through the bog, which is known to locals, where the ground is reasonably solid. The artisans are traveling with a wagon, maybe like 4 of them. They've got a horse pulling the wagon along this trail. And the ambush is going to be skeletons rising up out of the bog water. So rather than coming from above, they'll be coming from below. Okay, let's just play into it and see what happens. So the party of Nott, Maldita, Trake, and Dorca, with one steed and one pony between them. So probably Nott has allowed Trake to ride on his steed, and they're leading the pony with maybe some supplies packed on its back, and the rest of them are walking. So they're traveling reasonably slowly. They have stumbled onto this trail that they're now following north, and it is getting late. They're deciding whether to stop now and camp or keep going, and they see light ahead. There's a campfire lit up ahead. Dorca at this point is essentially blind because it's dark and he has failing eyesight. Maldita is walking close by with him and aiding him if he needs it. They decide to keep on traveling to get close to whoever it is that's camped up ahead. So they hurry on. They would be seen, I think, as they're approaching. But just before, they're close enough to easily talk to the people there at the camp, who look like simple travelers with a wagon. They perceive shadowy figures crawling up out of the water of the bog and making their way towards the campfire. Nott sees this first, sees the ambush. Before it begins, he sees that that's what's going to happen. I've just had to go off mic for about 10 minutes to check a bunch of stats. My notes are a mess, I've been trying to make them better, and maybe I'll do a blog post about how they look now. They are better, but I still didn't have clarity on a couple of things. For example, that Maldita lost some spirit during the ascent of Broken Peak, and her spirit's quite low now, so that could be a problem. But the situation is this. The sun is setting. The last orange light is glimmering over the boggy terrain all around them. The path they're on, it's like a rough road is too strong a word, but it's a dry trail through this bog, and it looks black in the encroaching darkness compared with the grey bog around it. And there are five creatures crawling out of the bog, three on one side, two on the other, crawling onto the road, and they're armed. So they visibly have, catching the light just ever so slightly, a weapon called a hook falx, which is kind of a long bladed weapon, and brass shields. Trake calls out. He shouts so that the travelers on the other side of the ambushers can hear. Beware, you're about to be attacked. There are bandits on the road. And then he charges forward. So Trake is on horseback. He's riding Nott's majestic charger, and he draws his short sword, and he is riding at full speed into the midst of these attackers. So I think probably Trake will be the first to attack, and the others are kind of running to keep up with him. Dorca is a concern because he cannot really see. So Dorca is going to be relying on following the sound of the others. Maldita, who had been kind of staying with him to aid him, is now concerned about Trake charging into battle alone. So Nott and Maldita run after Trake, and Dorca follows as best he can. And what Trake sees once he approaches, and these creatures stand up because there's no point in crawling anymore, there's a commotion now, is that he's riding into the midst of five skeletons. I'm going to be a little bit harsh. I'm always harsher on myself than when I'm actually running other games. Being confronted by five skeletons is pretty freaky, but I like the idea that for the warhorse, which has a particular understanding of the natural world, and that this is such an unnatural thing, I think the warhorse might have to pass a spirit save in order to proceed in and join the battle as Trake intended. So the warhorse has a spirit of 12, not bad odds. I'm going to roll a d20. So I'm looking for a 12 or under. And that's a 5. This majestic warhorse, who has been unnamed, I tend not to give a lot of attention to horses in Mythic Fastenland. I'll correct that after this session. I'll make a note for myself. Give horses names. Okay, so Trake is charging in. He's going to attack with 2d6 for his short sword and another d6 for the trample of the horse. So that's 3d6 against one of the targets as he comes into their midst. Okay, I've rolled a 5 and 2 4s. I'm imagining Trake, especially because his mentor has just died, and Trake is not a knight, but he clearly has martial skills, as being quite noble. And I think what his immediate goal here is to inflict damage and also to get between the attackers and the innocent travelers on the road. I have 3 dice that can be used. I've got a 5, which I'm going to use as damage, a 4, which I think I'll bolster that to inflict more damage, and then the other 4 will be a gambit to try and stop the progress of at least one of the skeletons from moving towards the group he's intending to defend. So he charges through, he tramples directly over one of the creatures and swings down at it with his sword. So that is 6 damage on one of the skeletons. The skeletons each have 3 guard, so he gets through that, and 6 vigor. So that reduces vigor to half of its total. Oh, sorry. You know what? I always forget about armor. The armor reduces the damage to 5, and then the vigor is reduced to 4. Okay, so it's not enough for a mortal wound. That first skeleton that he encounters, he can hear the bones breaking as he rides over it and connects with his sword against its falx, and it's a bold blow, and then he rears the horse up on his hind legs. The horse neighs, and he's now in the path of the others. And a second skeleton, he will stop in its tracks. It can no longer advance towards the travelers because it's directly blocked by Trigg. I think the skeletons should get a chance to attack before the others join the battle. There's five of them. Yikes. There's five of them. They can each attack with their falchs, this bladed weapon, and they can bludgeon with their shield. They're all going to attack Trigg. So that's 5d5, 5d4, all against Trigg. Maybe, will I split that and have some of them attack the horse and some of them attack him? Let's roll to decide that. I'll ask the stars, will any of the skeletons attack the horse? 3. No. Okay, everyone's going against Trigg. So I need 5d6 and 5d4. Because it's the worst die, I only own 1d4. So this is going to take a while. The d6 is first. Okay, that's probably the largest number of dice I've ever rolled in a single attack. There's 10 values here. The ones that will have an impact on the outcome are 5, 4, 4, and a 4. So the one which was trampled over is partially stunned and kind of motions towards Trigg, and its jawbone lowers, and it's as though it's screaming, but there's no throat or vocal cords to make any noise, and it's just kind of clattering at him. But it doesn't manage any damage. The one that he's closest to, which he's stopping, swings its falchs at his short sword and kind of traps his short sword so that his short sword will be impaired on the next turn. And then the others are just going to strike at him, which is an attack and two bolsters for a total of 7 damage. Trigg is wearing mail beneath his kind of fine shirt, so that will reduce it to 6 damage. They'll burn through his guard quite easily, and he's reduced to 6 vigor of 9. But he remains in the saddle, even though that was a fairly powerful attack. If they were human combatants, they might have been kind of discouraged by that, but he's holding strong. And by now, Nott and Maldita are ready to join the battle. Let's roll a look roll for... You know what? Let's handle it as clarity. Dorca, will he pass a clarity save and be able to join the battle, or will he have difficulty reaching them because he can't see very well? So I'm trying to roll 9 or under. 20. Dorca is running towards them as best he can and misses. Like, this is not a road. This is a trail that's heavily used, so it's kind of well trodden, but it's not even. He trips and he falls down into the ground. And it's more than just a fall. It is just reinforcing this feeling in Dorca that he needs to overcome this problem that he has. He feels unable to help the people that he wants to help. I'll knock D4 off his spirit, because this is not just tripping and falling down. For him, it means something more. It reminds him of being unable to protect his son in this vision that he has had. And that's 4 spirit loss. But Nott, Maldita, and Trigg are now able to attack. So Trigg is kind of engaged with one of the skeletons. One of them has his short sword pinned, and he can't really swing it to the best of its use. So he's going to attack that skeleton, and he will pull in the reins so that the horse raises up its hooves and tramples down on that skeleton. Maldita is going to attack the first skeleton that was injured to try and completely remove one of them from the battle. And Nott, being the only person in the battle who is capable of doing this, is going to smite. So he's going to make an attack, but with his smite, he will convert it to a blast attack so that it attacks all of the enemies he's targeting. And sometimes I'm real hard on myself, but I'm gonna rule in this case that Nott is attacking with great aggression with this mace, and he's kind of moving through this group and kind of swinging multiple times, but with enough precision that it does not endanger any of his allies. So I'm not going to have this blast apply to the allies in this case. So Trigg is trying to free his short sword and also pulling the horse to trample on this enemy. And while he's doing that, Nott will kind of come through the group with this flurry of blows and also attack this skeleton that he's fighting. So I'm going to be rolling a d4, a d6, and a d10. An 8, a 5, and a 1. Just for the, because there's going to be so many rolls here, I'm just going to keep it simple and not worry about gambits and just bolster everything. So the 8 will be raised to a 9. So that skeleton has not received any harm yet. They all have their shield, so that reduces the damage to 8. It's reduced to vigor 1, so it is mortally wounded. More broken bones, and even possibly smashing through the spine of this creature, and it ends on the ground under the hooves of this majestic steed, and Trake now looks around looking for the next enemy to attack. Maldita has decided to try to finish off the first skeleton that was attacked by Trake, so she'll be rolling a d6, and again Nott is going to come flying through while she's attacking and also swing into this skeleton with his mace. That's 2 5s, bring it to a 6 with the bolster, and that is enough to reduce its vigor to 0. She's attacking with a dagger, which you would imagine is not the most ideal weapon for fighting against pure bone, but she thrusts her dagger into the skull of this creature. Maybe it gets lodged in one of the eye sockets, and then Nott comes flying through with his mace, and the body entirely detaches from this skull, so that Maldita is left just holding the skull. They've killed 2 of the skeletons, effectively. One of them is Vigor 1, but we can come back to that. And then there's 3 more that are each going to get a d10 from Nott, who's continuing his furious blast attack. So he rolls a 5, a 4, and a 9. Okay, I'll deal with the 9 first. Okay, so that's enough to mortally wound one of the skeletons. I'll apply the 5 as damage to the third skeleton. And then, so he's moving through this group, and he's fighting with vigor that he's never really shown before in battle. And the final one, rather than doing raw damage, he will trap its shield. So he kind of takes the shaft of his mace and locks it against the shield of this, the healthiest remaining skeleton, so that it can no longer use its shield. So we get to the turn of the skeletons, and there are 2 remaining that can attack. Let me look at wavering morale. Organized groups roll once under their leader's spirit. Disorganized groups roll for each individual. Groups who lose half their number must pass a spirit save to avoid rout or surrender. These are skeletons, so they are not like an organized troop of soldiers, but they were planning an ambush. They lay in wait for this. So I think the wavering morale should apply. So they each have spirit 1. So for the 2 that are remaining, I'll roll an 8 and a 1. Amazing. I love this. Okay. The one that had been reduced to 5 vigor lays down its weapons. It lays down its falx and its shield and drops to its knees. And for the first time, when they watch it move like this, it's moving in a more human way than it had previously been doing. It's like the stress or the intensity of this moment had awakened something in it. It's less monstrous now, and it's whatever remnant of humanity was there, that's what's come to the fore in this moment where it surrenders. And then the final one that has its shield trapped is going to attempt to attack Nott. So that's a d6 for the falx. It can't use its shield to kind of bludgeon anymore, so it's just a d6 against Nott. It rolls a 1, and I think Nott doesn't even raise his weapon to deal with this. It just clashes against his plate armor, and he kind of just smiles at it. Let's have another attack. Oh, sorry, you know what I need to do is I need to check. Was Nott fatigued by what he just did? Kind of charging in and swinging his mace at everyone. Pass a vigor save or become fatigued. His vigor is 12. and I roll a 12. Nott is going to smite again. So this time he will be just focusing it on one combatant. So he'll be rolling a d10 and a d12. I'll do this first and then I'll see if others need to contribute. Yeah, he's rolled a 9. So the other fighters look on as Nott. He had his mace trapping the shield of the skeleton. He pulls it back and with a kind of a flurry swings it at this skeleton. And it just scatters onto the ground as pieces of bone. In the aftermath, as they're all kind of panting and looking around, what they have before them is a living skeleton that has surrendered and two others that are so broken that they surely will die. Trake dismounts and walks to the group of travelers who are nearby and is going to introduce himself and check that they're okay. Maldita will run back towards Dorca to tend to him and make sure he's okay. And then it's left for Nott to decide what to do with this surrendered skeleton, which I think I will deal with next time. So we're back on the road and back fighting dead things. It's good to be off that mountain. Okay, thanks for listening, folks.